WBZ H910 AM, W245 CT Hayward.
Always streaming on the Civic Media
ABC app. News, I'm Dave Packer. A new wave of COVID infections hitting home. President Biden masked up in public for the first time in months after the First Lady tested positive for the virus. ABC News Chief White House Correspondent Mary Bruce.
The First Lady is isolating at the family's Delaware Beach home. Now, all of this is raising questions about the president's big foreign travel later this week. I pressed the White House on whether they're making any contingency plans, but they insist they are moving ahead.
Enrique Tarrio received the longest sentence so far in connection with the January 6th attack on the Capitol, 22 years. After he was convicted of seditious conspiracy. In court Tuesday, he pleaded for leniency, but the judge saying he's shown no remorse for the attack. Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell returning to the Senate with a new doctor's note after freezing up for a second time in a month. The Capitol physicians stated that there's no evidence that the 81-year-old has suffered a stroke or seizure or that he had a disorder like Parkinson's. This is ABC News. The political fate of suspended Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton is now in the hands of Texas state senators. ABC's Olivia Osteen has more.
Some serious allegations that the House found merited an impeachment just a few months ago. And now it's been tossed to the other chamber where Texas senators are serving as jurors and will ultimately decide his fate, which could be removal from current office and an ineligibility for future office in Texas.
Paxton was impeached in a 121-23 vote in May for abuse of office after evidence was submitted of claims that Paxton misused his position in a mutually beneficial relationship with campaign donor and real estate investor Nathan Paul. Both Paul and Paxton have denied any wrongdoing, and Paxton pled not guilty to all charges in the Senate trial Tuesday. A conviction vote requires a two-thirds majority vote. Dave Packer, ABC News.
Experience Nightlight, September 8th and 9th from 5 until 10:30 p.m. Presented by Joy Engine. The dazzling spectacle is an immersive 4D light festival taking place in Milwaukee's historic Mitchell Street neighborhood. Digital animations, dance, music, art, and fashion combine to create a visual, family-friendly sensory experience outside of 710 West Historic Mitchell Street, home of Mitchell Street Arts. The event is family-friendly and free to the public. Don't miss this iconic event. Nightlight, where art comes to life. Information at joyengine.org.
Wisconsin traditions have been built for years around the Badgers, game day, and the mascot. But lead miners are the original Badgers in the state, not the animal or the mascot. It was the 1820s, and the miners often didn't have shelter in the winters, so they lived like Badgers by digging tunnels into the hillsides to stay warm and sleep where they worked. It led to the reason why today you really can't think of Wisconsin without thinking Badgers. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons, like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, can potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
More than 80 million Americans depend on AM radio each month for news, weather, and emergency information. A new bill in Congress would make sure AM radio remains in cars. Because when cell and internet services are down, this free service could be your only lifeline.
Text AM to 52886 and tell Congress to support the AM Radio for Every Vehicle Act.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
If I could be you,
and you could be me,
for just 1 hour.
If you could find a way
to get inside
each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe. And is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
But we also proved that I'm not always nice.
But even when you're upset and even when you're ticked off, you still come from a place of compassion and love. Whereas I'm just old, bitter, and jaded.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin. Welcome to As Goes Wisconsin. I am your host, Kristen Bry. It is the second hour of As Goes Wisconsin. We're going to see if we fixed our mic issues from the last segment. But if you've been following the media since like 2016, you've probably come across this chart. And it's a chart that has all of the different icons of all the different media news outlets that are out there, and they're rated. They're rated as far as how far left to how far right, how in the middle that they are. But then they're also rated up and down as far as how much you can trust them. Well, I am so excited because I never knew who actually made this chart. I just remember when it came out. But in fact, then I came across a Pointer op-ed that said, why I decided to rate the news. And so I'm so excited to talk to Vanessa Otero, who is the founder of Ad Fontes Media, which helps basically, it tracks news bias as scientifically as possible and helps businesses and consumers and educators navigate this newscape / hellscape that we've created. So welcome to the show, Vanessa.
It's my pleasure to be here. Thanks so much, Kristen.
So I guess let's start with the backstory of it. Why did you decide to rate the news?
Great question. Lots of people ask this, and I just have to say, I'm so glad that you use your hands when you talk about the chart, like from high to low and left to right, because I'm constantly doing that. And for those who can't only hearing and can't see us right now, they're missing that part because it's just this two-dimensional infographic.
Mm-hmm.
So in 2016, everyone remembers the run-up to that election,
right? Of course.
It was quite contentious, especially on social media. And Facebook was really the place where people love to argue about this. And people would argue to the point where they'd lose their friends and family. They'd unfriend them. And when they're making political points, I noticed that people would use stuff from their own side and throw it to somebody from the other side and say, see, this is why I'm right. Look at this, article from HuffPost or from mm-hmm. Breitbart. And those things tend to confirm one's own biases, but are not very convincing to the other side. And then beyond that, there are much better fact reporting news sources. There are also some really crazy far out there, YouTube channels, for example.
Yep.
And they really vary in reliability and bias. I thought it would be cool to talk to my friends about how those things are different. How some things are better, some things are okay, some things are worse, some things are left and right, some things are way left and right, way farther out there. put it on infographic to talk to my friends because I'm a big nerd. So I did this as a hobby.
I know, because you were a patent lawyer. You were, this was not like, you were like a media specialist. Like, you were just fascinated. No. I feel like it's so interesting to see like what the election of 2016 did. I feel like it sparked lots of different career changes for people. It certainly did for me.
Yeah, absolutely. It went viral, much to my surprise. I mean, I was not a social media influencer or anything. This really, it took on a life of its own. And as you can imagine, people had thoughts about it. People had opinions about where the news sources should be. And it just sort of took over my life. I was a patent lawyer, so this sort of took over all my nights and weekends because people kept asking for things like, well, what's the data behind this? And what's the methodology? And, oh, can you add more news sources? Because there are definitely a lot more than the few dozen on here. And then, like, the main complaint would be, well, this is biased because you're biased.
Yeah.
And I was like, you're right. I am biased. So how do we measure this? How do we mitigate that? And the thing that really sort of shocked me was that textbook publishers would reach out and say, you know, can we print this in our textbook? And how much would you charge for that? And I was like, well, don't do that. This is biased. It's just me.
It's not so, ready yet.
And so, but I realized that there was this need, right? Like, to convey, like, our media landscape is so complex. It's not binary, like, oh, it's just news versus opinion, or it's not just real news versus fake news. It's not just left versus right. It's really a continuum. Like, there are things that make us think of journalism as good, and as, you know, opinion is like okay, and you know stuff that's worse than opinion is not so good. And I really wanted to make it as rigorous as possible. So fast forward, it's, you know, almost 7 years since that first chart, and we've got a big team of analysts that rate the news together.
So yeah, so that's what Advantis Media is now. It is a source of analysts who track not only just news organizations as a whole, but also individual news stories.
Yeah. So yeah, we have it's a company. We're a public benefit corporation, so we're a for-profit company with a public mission to rate the news and to positively transform society. So we have a group of over 60 analysts from left, right, and center. It's really, really important for us to have politically diverse group of analysts. So how we rate individual news sources, what I mean by news sources is websites, TV shows, podcasts, like anything in those formats that people get their news or news or information that they make decisions in their lives about. So we have what we call news and news-like sources because they're places people get their information from that you look at it and you're like, well, that's not really news. But they get their information from it, right? So we rate all of that content, and how we do it is by analyzing the content itself.
Okay.
So ad fontes is Latin for to the source, because we're actually looking at the source. And to come up with a rating for an overall, like a website, we'll rate a representative sample of many articles from that website. So initially it might just be a few dozen, but for these biggest news sources, we've rated hundreds and hundreds of articles in our sample to come up with the overall scores.
And so take me through like the different criteria. Like, so you've trained there's 60 analysts, you've trained yourself, obviously. And so like, what are the touchstones or the touch points of, it has this, it doesn't have this, it has that, it doesn't have this, as far as when looking at a piece of like a piece of content and where it falls, both, like we said, from left to right, but also from like trusted to not.
Yeah, so it's helpful to start with the categories of the of the media bias chart. So if you look at whenever you're online, go to adfontesmedia.com and just take a look at the category descriptions, because from top to bottom, you know, there's 8 categories. So there are things at the top that make news sources good, like At the very, very top is high effort investigative fact reporting. But all the categories are at the top have to do with journalism and fact reporting. But the type of content that you see, it can vary. Like there, sometimes there's just simple fact reporting, like a quick local news story that's reliable. Sometimes you have, you know, a deeper story that has a little bit of analysis and quite a bit of context. All that stuff is up at the top. But we really value the work that journalists do to bring us information that we wouldn't have access to otherwise. We put that right at the apex of the chart. So in the middle, below that, you know, the simplest fact reporting, we have things that are mostly analysis. So there's analysis, and then right below that, there's opinion. The difference between fact, analysis, and opinion is really the density of facts in the story that are used to support the conclusions. So in analysis, you will have like, you know, fact, conclusion.
What this
opinion
means.
Is mostly just, yeah, like what it, exactly what it means, statements of meaning or inferences, or, you know, inferences about the future are common. Opinions tend to be not structured like analysis, which is analysis is fact, conclusion, fact, meaning. Opinion is more like conclusion, right? Then below that, you've got the not so good stuff. So you've got things that are not as good. They're not merely opinion, right? They're somewhat worse than that. But they're not outright what folks commonly call misinformation. Misinformation is a really broad term. It's very politically co-opted. And so we sort of avoid using that in our categories. But things can be selective or propagandistic. I mean, they can be name calling. So if you're, you know, using vilification or dehumanization of folks, that's worse than just merely opinion, right? And then you have things that contain misleading information, things that contain inaccurate information. So top to bottom, we're looking for the presence of those things, like the expression, the underlying veracity, the underlying claims, and things like headlines and graphics can all contribute to that. So those are things that our analysts are looking for, reliability. And I could go on and on, but for bias, we have a number of different sub-factors that we look for as well. But it all comes down to what are in the sentences, what's in the content.
And so this is so fascinating to me because, like, I think, you know, because we say a lot. So this is an opinion show, right? And I do, like, I am not, I have always said that. It's like, I'm not a journalist, but we provide information. And, like, all of the stuff that we do on the show, no matter how much I try to research it ahead of time, it's secondhand reporting, right? I am using the reporting that other journalists are doing. And so I try to find as much as you can, for especially for local news in Wisconsin, trying to find the places that are unbiased. And so I want to set this up because I don't think we'll have enough time to answer before we have to go to commercial break in like a minute and a half. But is the goal then to, is the goal to be in the like apex of the most trusted and most fact-finding and in the center, or in the time that since you've been doing this for 7 years, is there room for all of it, but it's more about media literacy of the people consuming it to understand where it fits?
Absolutely. There's room for all of it.
Okay. Yeah. So let's table that. And when we come back, we'll talk about why understanding that it's not that we need to get rid of all these things, maybe some of the misleading. Wrong stuff we do, but a lot of it, there is room for all of it. So our guest is Vanessa Otoro, who is the founder and CEO of Ad Fontes Media. We'll be right back after the break. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
The common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. But publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give 3 cheers for freedom of the press. What a mess. Oh, publishers are...
Opt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Don't let biased algorithms, or degree screens, or exclusive professional networks, or stereotypes, don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast. Lows around 60 overnight under cloudy skies with a slight chance for scattered thunderstorms. Northwesterly winds 8 to 15 miles per hour. Overcast tomorrow. Chance for scattered storms. Daytime highs approaching 63. Lows around 50 tomorrow night. Cloudy skies. Cloudy skies expected Thursday. Decreasing clouds by Friday. Mid-60s Thursday. Low 70s by Friday. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on Lake Air WLAK 1260 AM. Right now 69.
This summer, Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK has a new starting lineup. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Tom and Crude. Then at 6, The Maggie Dawn Show. WLAK.
Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. We are talking to Vanessa Otero, who is the founder and CEO of Ad Fontes Media, about which basically is a company that is meant to help businesses and consumers and educators and all of us track the news and its bias as we just try to understand how it fits into our media landscape. And so before we went to the break, I kind of set up this question as far as it's not necessarily because there is so much content out there now. There is no going back to like the three channels of ABC, CBS, and NBC, and that's where everyone gets their news from. But it's not just about finding the places that are like right in the middle with the least amount of bias and the highest integrity. Like you found in researching all these things that there is value in having this broad landscape.
Yes, absolutely. Because you mentioned that you do, will bring like secondhand reporting, and there's value to that. Like you're still bringing facts to your audience, right? And then you do some analysis and opinion. And that's a common format for not just podcasts, but it's really common in podcasts, but also for evening news, cable, right? Cable can go in the direction of just tons and tons and tons of opinion, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not a problem to have analysis and opinion, and it's not a problem to have left and right political viewpoints or ideologies or moral foundations or principles. We need this content. We need this analysis and opinion content and the advocacy of principles and foundations left, right, and center in order to come to consensus about how to move forward as a society. It's absolutely critical, right? So while on the media bias chart, we put it right at the very top because we have to put something at the very top, the work that journalists do, like that function, that role, we put it at the top because the analysis and opinion couldn't really exist without that, right? Without the original reporting. But you want, it's not about being at the top middle. And actually the middle, we're not saying that the middle is best.
Like, okay.
Middle is middle. Like middle can be middle for a lot of reasons. One, something can be centrist and land in the middle. So like centrism is a bias towards a centrist political position. Things can be truly minimally biased as straightforwardly as possible. And that you do like to see in the fact reporting stories. But then things can be a balance of biases. So like, what if you had somebody that's super far right arguing with somebody super far left? That happens on some podcasts. What if that's information is misleading? Like, so there are a handful of shows that are, you know, down in the middle bottom of the chart. It's not as common, but just because something's middle doesn't mean it's like great. When you have analysis and opinion in podcasts and TV shows, it's just more valuable as a, as news and information when it's more dense with facts. Like a well-supported analysis, left-leaning or right-leaning, is going to convince more people over time than things that are less dense with facts and are just a bunch of name-calling.
No. So I guess the two questions I want to try to fit in before we have to let you go is, one, how much does this, have you found, like, does it end up on the burden is on the news consumer to be able to navigate this and understand, have media literacy to understand, what am I consuming right now? And how much is it the responsibility on the news organizations themselves to be more transparent about, like, this is entertainment, this is opinion, this is like as objective as it gets?
I think it's on all of us. I mean, all of us are the stakeholders in this thing. So it's hard to point to one set of stakeholders, like news consumers, like, oh, you should know not to share this stuff that's misleading, right? Yeah. But what about, like, where did they learn or not learn that?
Yeah.
What about schools, right? What's a function of teaching media literacy in schools? So can you just, you know, point the finger at educators and put the responsibility on them to fix it? You know, that's certainly one area that can help, but what about the role of the publishers themselves, the advertisers who support the publishers, the social media companies who are so responsible for distributing this content on a mass scale, right? Each one of those stakeholders has a role to play. So each needs to take responsibility for their own role in the media landscape. So not just one, it's all of us together.
And then my final question, although I feel like I could talk to you forever about this, is one of the interesting things that I saw in your op-ed saying why it was called Why I Decided to Rate the News was the fact that what you found with brands, and I think this is super interesting right now with the Elon Musk news over the weekend as far as the Anti-Defamation League and him now trying to sue them because they're suggesting advertisers don't necessarily come back to Twitter, X, whatever. But what you found, it's not that brands don't want their brand associated when they're thinking about advertising dollars with bad news or hard news, but they are very aware of partisan news. Could you say a little bit more about that? We have 2 minutes, so that's a big question for not a lot of time.
Sure. Well, let me just lay the landscape of some of the issues with the relationships with advertising and the news landscape that creates a lot of these bad incentives right now.
Yeah.
So we sell our data to advertisers. It's a really it's a big part of our business. And when we first started approaching advertisers, we thought that the most useful way that they could implement our data was to make sure that they were not advertising next to really misleading content or highly polarizing content. Because we'd go around on the corners of the internet and see like a bunch of brands' ads popping up there and saying like, well, they probably shouldn't be sponsoring this and they probably wouldn't like it if they knew. And there are brands that do that. But then we went to a lot of these bigger brands and said, hey, do you want to use our data for this? And they said, oh, actually, this isn't a problem for us because we just don't advertise on news anymore at all. And I was like, well, that seems worse. So
unfortunately, I wish I would have asked that question earlier because this is so interesting.
No,
so maybe
okay.
We'll just have to have you back to talk about that completely separately.
Anytime.
Oh my God, this was so interesting. Vanessa Otero is the founder and CEO of Ad Fontes Media. We're going to post her op-ed and the interactive map on our show notes for today. Go check it out. Check out the work that they're doing. It's super important. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Have a great day. All right. When we come back, James Causey, veteran.
This summer, Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK has a new starting lineup. 12:15, Town Call. 1 p.m., The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. WLAK.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Convicted murderer Danilo Cavalcante remains on the run today as the search zone further expands in the suburbs of Philadelphia following multiple sightings. ABC's Trevor Ault has more from Pennsylvania.
Some parts of this area are so densely wooded that authorities have to search within a few yards of each other. But they say there is no evidence that Cavalcante has had any outside help, and they believe as he gets more desperate, he will reveal himself.
Former Proud Boys leader Enrique Terrio, sentenced to more than 2 decades in prison, 22 years, the longest sentence imposed thus far in connection with January 6. President Biden expected to attend this week's G20 summit in India, even though the First Lady's tested positive for COVID. She's isolating at the Biden Delaware home. In southern Europe, record rains leading to severe flooding. It's blamed for at least 7 deaths. Another scorcher on tap for much of the U.S., including the Northeast, which until now was spared from the extreme heat this summer. This is ABC News.
The RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight.
The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know what's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
Radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin.
This includes a commitment to news.
Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News, today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station. As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
And apparently, Maggie Dawn, big Newton lover of the Maggie Dawn Show.
I was so offended, Jane. You know how much I love and admire you. You're like my freaking radio hero. And then to hear you bash my Newton.
It's still bad.
You want the cakey part cakey. You want the jammy part jammy. That is like bringing me back.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Bry. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Todd Alba Show.
I see the silhouette of Todd Alba, who still hasn't figured out that maybe a TV person could help, you know, set this whole thing up.
For whatever reason, yeah. StreamYard's video is just deciding that the room is too bright.
When has Todd Alba been accused of being too bright? I mean, really there? I'm like, where's Aaron with the rim shot?
The Todd Alba Show. Weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
My name is Teresa Barber. I was in the United States Navy, and I served overseas in the Middle East and Africa. Early on in my career, I had a commander that taught our suicide prevention training, and the very next day, he took his own life. 90% of suicide attempts involving a gun are fatal. My way of continuing my service is to help protect my community by being a responsible gun owner and by storing firearms safely. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide.
Brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.
Another summer day has come and gone away from Paris and Rome, but I wanna go home.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I'm Kristen Bry, along with Greg Buck on the board. And I'm so excited to finally be talking to my colleague, who we've been talking about this for a while, but James Causey is an editorial writer and columnist, also at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel in the Ideas Lab. He writes, I make silly videos, so his job is a little more influential, I think, than mine is. But he's been covering, he's a Milwaukee native, and he's been covering his hometown, writing and editing for decades. And there's so many different things we could talk about. Your work is always so impactful. But the one that caught my eye in the last month is you attended Bader Philanthropies. They hosted an event called Fostering Hope Through Violence Prevention. and talking to teenagers about the violence that's happening in Milwaukee, and especially because a lot of the stories we've heard over the summer, it's teenagers also perpetuating the violence. It's a lot of them that carry guns. And I thought this was so interesting reading it, James, because it's we just discount kids all the time, that they don't know, that the people who are in charge know better. And so I'd love to hear more of just like you talked to Larry Dorsey, who's one of the main kids you talked to, but I'm imagining you talked to more than just him.
Yeah, you know, thanks for having me on the show, first of all. But I guess I want to say this. I talk to kids all the time.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just in this instance where I had an opportunity to talk with young people. And it's a constant theme that I get from young people that they're not being listened to. So we wonder why when we come up with different ideas and ways to come up with plans to keep kids safe and to make sure that they succeed in life, but we never get input from what the kids really need. We always assume, based on studies and our own upbringing, what kids need, but kids are different today. They require a lot of different type of stimulus and I think we need to listen to them more, because what we're doing right now isn't working.
And so when you do talk to them, what are you hearing as far as what's missing for... what's missing?
Yeah, I mean, I guess what I hear the most is that a lot of young people need mentorship. They need adults to be involved in their lives that really care about them. You know, that's why when you see these big stories like on Andre Lee Ellis, who started the garden on 9th and Ring, and now he's doing a different garden, how kids gravitate to him because he shows that he cares for the kids. He shows that he loves them. And a lot of kids are missing that in their neighborhoods or at school or at home. Or, you know, Running Rebels is another example where they provide the mentorship for the young people there. And the kids take more of a leadership role. And it's just a lot of programs out there that are doing it. They're just not doing it collectively. And they're not transform, like getting this information to the policymakers to get young people what they want. In the case of Larry Dorsey and a group of kids that were on a panel at Bader, the one thing that they kept saying is that we don't want more police officers in the school. We were like mental health experts. We were like people like that to help us in our daily lives. A police officer that doesn't help us any. But the state isn't listening to that, and the state will provide police officers in the school this coming school year.
That was the one that really stuck out to me, as far as like point blank saying we do not want more blood. We do not want more police officers. What we want is, like you said, mentors, mental health specialists, and also more Black teachers. And that's been a problem for a while.
Yeah, I've talked about the need for having Black teachers for the longest. I've written about this myself and my own personal experiences going through MPS. You know, if you think about this, so from the time I was in kindergarten and graduated 12th grade, I only had one Black male teacher. Wow. And that was my Spanish teacher, who I never forgot. He actually pulled me into Spanish in 10th grade and said, "Hey, James, you have to take a foreign language." And he was a Spanish teacher, and he pulled me in. That was the first Black male teacher I ever had. And that includes gym classes and all those other classes, too. In college at Marquette University, I didn't have any Black professors. It wasn't until grad school, I think in grad school I had one, actually on a Harvard fellowship, I had a Black professor. But throughout my entire college educational career, K through 12, 4 years at Marquette University, 2.5 years of grad school, I had two Black male teachers. And that just can't happen. And Black male teachers are not just important to Black students. They're important to white students as well, because and all students, because you learn from diversity is a very important component to learning. And you don't get that. And we don't get that enough through MPS.
And we've been talking, we started today's show with asking about what is, you know, in general, this is a statewide show, like what is your biggest concern going back to school, which is for many kids today is the first day back. And so we talk one hand, there's staff shortages in general. And then you get to even to the level below that, which is, as we just said, is having more diverse staff that is more representative and also understands the kids that they're teaching in a better, or at least a different way than I would if I was an MPS teacher, right?
Yeah. And, you know, like, for instance, I keep going back to Larry Dorsey, the young man I profiled in my column. He's not saying that white teachers are bad.
And no. But it's different.
But it's a different level of understanding. I mean, it's just like, our students want to know that a teacher can understand their background, where they're coming from, what kind of what their neighborhoods are like, you know, what they go through on a daily basis, what it's like to just be Black in America. Mm-hmm. It's tough. It's very tough. And I don't think a lot of people understand how tough it is being a Black, especially a male in this country. You're under the watchful eyes of everybody all the time. And you know, I don't think people understand it. And I think Black male teachers bring that level of understanding that kids appreciate.
We're talking to James Causey, who is an editorial writer and columnist, veteran journalist at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, about his newest, well, not newest piece, but a piece that came out in early August about listening to teenagers in Milwaukee about solutions to the problems that we're facing, the problems that they're facing, instead of keeping them out of the discussion when it comes to violence in schools. And, you know, you referenced at the end of that article the piece that you did as someone who grew up in Milwaukee of what happened to us, where it was you, was it two or three of your other classmates from third grade?
No, well, I looked at my entire third grade class where I found out what happened to everybody from my third grade class. What
happened to everybody, okay.
Yeah, from 1978. So it was 28 students, my teacher, I tried to track them all down to find out what happened to every single one of my third grade classmates, because that was a pivotal year. It was a year that my parents purchased their first and only house on 39th and Capitol. I went from living in 53206, where it was predominantly Black, to a very diverse neighborhood. We had a German neighbor on the left of us and some white neighbors on the right of us. I went to Samuel Clemens Elementary School, I still stay in the same house on 30, on Hope, 36 and Hope. So I walk to school every day. And, but 1978 was a pivotal year because it was the year that I actually saw white flight take place right before my eyes. I actually saw the people leaving my neighborhood after we moved in. And I saw a lot of white kids that were at my school leave as well. And the manufacturing in 1978, it was peaking. It had peaked and it was starting. That peak was dropping. So a lot of people were leaving the city for the suburbs as manufacturing companies like A.O. Smith, Harnish Fager, Safeway Production and Steel, and companies like that started to cut back and move their facilities to southern states where they didn't have unions. So it was a lot of that taking place. And I saw my neighborhood change at a very young age. So I wanted to know, I started this third grade project because I wanted to know what impact incarceration may have had on the students from my class, either them, their children, relatives, and things like that. And I discovered that over half of my third grade classmates had been touched by incarceration in some way, shape, or form. And that stands out because I wanted to tell a different way of how incarceration impacts the lives of people of color in the city.
And so when you did that massive undertaking of a project and the retrospective of your time, your entire life living in Milwaukee, what do you feel like, and you think about it as you apply it, as you're talking to teenagers today, like what has stayed the same and what is different with the current generation of teenagers in Milwaukee specifically and what they're facing? Like, is it just more, because I think about this, my friend Corey Joe, when she was in fourth grade, she was on a cover of, or like a front page of Journal Sentinel. I remember she showed it to me. And the headline was something that could still be printed today. And it was talking about Black kids, white kids, schools. And it's the same headlines. And she's probably in between your age and my age, but it's like every decade, it seems like a lot stays the same, but I also have to imagine a lot has changed.
Yeah, I think the only thing that stayed the same is that kids still want to be loved. They still want to be appreciated. They want to be understood. And they want the best out of life. I think what's changed is that the kids realize that a lot of people don't have their best interest in mind. as opposed to not being listened to when they say that we would prefer to have mental health counselors, but you're going to give us police instead. Mm-hmm. You know, we want to have more things in the city for us to do. Like, we would like to have a movie theater in Milwaukee. Why do we have to go to the suburbs to go to the movies? Yeah. You know, it's like simple things that our young people have been asking for a long period of time that's been ignored. And now we have it where, you know, a few bad apples ruins everything. So, you know, schools, if you go to most schools today, they have these big pillars in front because they're worried about the Kia boys driving recklessly on the playground. So a school doesn't really feel like a safe environment anymore. You know, kids are going through metal detectors and all those kind of things. We didn't have to do that when we were going to school. But so society has changed. And I think what's happening is that we still are not going back to the core things of what kids really want. They want to be loved. They want to be understood. They want to be listened to. And if we don't do those things, then things are going to continually get worse. And we're going to keep coming up with these solutions that never work.
And there is also another level that you touch on in the article that I felt personally. There's a kid who comes to our house every once in a while to ask if he can mow the lawn, make some extra cash, right? His name's Junior. And we hadn't seen him for a while. And then he came one day and my husband asked him, he was like, where's your friend that you usually come with? And he said, so nonchalant. I mean, this kid's 13, 14, so nonchalantly, he got shot and just kept, and then was like, can my buddy help? Blah, blah, blah. And it's like shook me because of how young he is and how easily that rolled off the tongue of his reality. And I think that's the other thing as far as what needs to be in place to deal with the trauma that, like, so many kids just are not, it's not like we talk about the first day of school and there's so many other things that in the suburbs are the concerns versus for what a lot of these kids are facing when it comes to violence and incarceration and like a different level of trauma that I never had to experience, let's be honest.
Yeah, it's the problem is that our kids are exposed to it all the time. I mean, if you just go to the news, even our local news, it talks about crime, not just here, but all over the country. It could be a shooting in New York City, and it's blasted, you know, it's in the top 5 minutes of a news broadcast here. So it seems like the world is such a violent place. And so you got to think about, you know, as a media person, I often think about, am I doing more harm than good when I'm writing something? And I think we all should like take that into consideration as journalists. How much harm are we really doing? Are we really informing the community? Or are we harming the community with our reporting? And I think that sometime, you know, with the reporting that's done, it's harm, it's damaging, and we need to change that.
We're going to take a quick break, but James Causey will still be here after the break. He is the editorial writer and columnist at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. If you have any questions, you feel free to text them in, 844-967-2789. We'll take a break and wrap up the show with James Causey in just a minute. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Baby, I'm done. I gotta go home. Let me go home.
Home tonight. I'm coming back home. I'm coming back.
Wisconsin traditions have been built for years around the Badgers, game day, and the mascot. But lead miners are the original Badgers in the state, not the animal or the mascot. It was the 1820s, and the miners often didn't have shelter in the winters, so they lived like Badgers by digging tunnels into the hillsides to stay warm and sleep where they worked. It led to the reason why today you really can't think of Wisconsin without thinking Badgers. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons, like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over, then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast. Overcast skies today with a chance for scattered thunderstorms. Daytime highs approaching 69. Northwesterly winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Overcast tonight. Lows dip down to about 51. High of 65 tomorrow. Bright sunshine expected Friday with daytime highs approaching 72. 76 Saturday. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on Lake Air WLAK 1260 AM. Right now 69.
This summer, Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK has a new starting lineup. Beginning at 6, Up North News. Then at 8, Stu Daniels on Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
Cold snap like a coiled spring. You can feel the frost coming on. We are merry golden, dropping orange and umber. Barely holding on.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry, along with Greg Bach on the board. We are talking to James Causey, who's an editorial writer and columnist at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, about his piece from last month talking about teens in Milwaukee and why we should listen to them. And I think, so if we talk about part of the solution to some of the issues happening in Milwaukee of talking to kids, and we talked about some of the things that they've told you that they need more of, need less of. If they were heard, because you think about it, I mean, we have David Crowley as our Milwaukee county executive. We have Chevy Johnson as our mayor. Two guys who were these kids in a lot of ways, right? As far as where they came from. I mean, you did an incredible story on David as far as like he had a very sliding doors scenario as far as where his life could have taken a different turn had he not been evicted, right? And and so we have leaders now who know these stories and know the hardship that can happen. And so what is the obstacle? What is the block from getting them to incorporate listening sessions with kids into the solutions? Like, forget about the state, because lawmakers in Madison, that's a different obstacle. But what do you think is like keeping these conversations from happening?
Well, that's a million-dollar question. Yeah. I think the conversations are happening in a lot of different venues. I just don't think they've been done collectively, where they hear from the young people, they write it down, and they put it to action. You know, So what typically happens, like what happened just as recently on the story I worked on, we heard these great kids get up here, and they were very articulate. They said exactly what they wanted, what they needed, how they wanted to be understood, how they wanted to be educated. You know, you had all these leaders in the room who clapped and told them that they were great and that they were happy for them. Then nothing. Yeah. I mean, so these meetings turn into like these exercises that lead to nothing. And as a result, I mean, I'm tired of going to these types of meetings. I actually knew what they were going to turn into. I figured I would just go so I could write what I wrote. But we have these meetings all the time. We have these great ideas. We hear from kids. We hear from leaders. And then when you 2 months later, nothing, 3 months later, nothing, a year later, we're having the same conversation all over again with different kids. This has got to stop. This madness has got to stop. If we're not going to do or incorporate any of the ideas that these young people are coming up with, or make any kind of changes that's been recommended by those deeply being the most impacted, then let's stop doing these meetings. We're just wasting people's time.
Yeah. It's just making people feel better that they're doing something, even though it doesn't lead to anything.
Yeah, these are feel good. At the very least, I would have liked for some of the leaders at this last meeting that I was at to say, hey, you guys have some great points. And Larry, I know you're about to start at MATC. I would like to cover your first year at MATC. or, you know, I want to be your mentor. I'll be the person to help walk with you hand in hand as you go through this process of going through college, which is, you'll probably be a first-time college student. You know, but let's do something. Can we do something? It's like, it's this big disconnect where, okay, we get these great ideas, but what happens next? There's no follow-through. And that's what makes a lot of things that happen in this city so frustrating, because, but that's why our job is important too, because we have to hold leaders' feet to the fire and keep bringing it up. What are you going to do? How come you haven't done anything yet? And we need to do more of those kind of stories. And you will see more of that coming from me in the near future for sure.
Well, that's a good segue. I was going to say, what are you working on these days?
Well, right now, I did a fun column that should be coming out this week on Lamar Franklin and Mack Whettle. They've been friends for 70 years. They met in 1953. Whew. When Lamar Franklin's parents bought a bar on 12th and 12th Street, and that bar was an opportunity. Frank was he was 8 years old. He met Mack Whettle, who was 5 at the time. They became instant friends, and that friendship turned into a 70-year friendship, which they will celebrate on September 9th. These guys have been through it all. I mean, they graduated, had celebrations, family members met each other, they've been at each other's weddings, met each other's kids. They also suffered losses when family members have passed away. They've been there to lift each other up. And what's interesting about a 7-decade-long friendship is that Harvard did a study that said that people who can maintain long-lasting friendships are healthier. You have a healthier outcome. It lowers your chances of dementia, increases your overall health. And scientists even said that having a close friendship, someone that you could really depend on, like a best friend, is almost as good as exercise and diet. So when you think about that impact on your mental health and how important that is, especially coming out of the pandemic, how important that is to really have someone that you could depend on and count on, man, that's incredible. I hope that I'm best friends with my best friend who I first met in 10th grade in high school. I hope we stay friends as long as they have, because they have really depended on each other throughout that 7 decades.
That's so important. I feel like you cover so many heavy stories. And like you said, there's so many stories that feel like probably just the hamster wheel of the same thing. And so to cover stories like the actual feel good stuff and the good things that are happening, like it's always good to see you write about those things as well.
Yeah, you could get too heavy at times, and you know, and I don't want to be the Debbie Downer all the time, but I know that those issues are important too, because I live in a community, so I see a lot of these things happening. That's why I feel compelled to write about it, because I think I could bring a level of understanding that other journalists can't, because mm-hmm. they're not as close to it as I am. That's why I write about a lot of the tough issues. But sometimes we have to, you know, I have to start highlighting the good things too, and do more of that, because, you know, I don't want to be the one that's always focusing on the problems, because there's a lot of love, a lot of good things happening in our community. And a 70-year-long friendship is one that should be highlighted, especially by our newspaper.
Absolutely. Well, James, I'm so happy we finally got you on the show. We will certainly bring you back, because there's many things that I want to talk to you about. You're such a invaluable asset to the city of Milwaukee and Milwaukee journalism, as far as definitely go check out his most recent pieces, but also What Happened to Us. I mean, there's so many things that you've done in the last couple of years that are just fascinating and fantastic. So thank you for spending time with us today.
I appreciate it, and I appreciate you too. Thanks a lot, and take care.
Have a great day. All right. Well, that about does it for us today. Packed guests. Tomorrow we got no guests. Tomorrow's just you and me, Greg.
No guests?
We have no guests. It's just you and me. We're going to kick stuff around. We're going to have some fun. Maybe we'll play some games. But thank you for everyone who listened and was part of the show today. Thank you to James Causey. Thank you to Dan Schaefer. Thank you to Vanessa Otero.
It was jam-packed today. Wow.
It was jam-packed. You didn't get a lot of words in.
That's fine. No one needs to hear this. It's fine.
All right. Well, we will be back tomorrow at 10 a.m. to do this all over again. Have a great day. This has been As Goes Wisconsin.
If you're a motorist of the four-wheel variety, please watch out for those of us in Wisconsin who do their traveling on two wheels. Adjust your mirrors to reduce your blind spots. Allow motorcyclists a full lane width. Use your turn signal when merging or changing lanes. And allow more following distance between you and the motorcycle. Motorists and motorcyclists can work together to achieve zero preventable deaths on Wisconsin roads. Zero in Wisconsin. Together we can save lives. Learn more at zeroinwisconsin.gov.
Sponsored by Wisconsin DOT.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, can potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to Real Deal on Fentanyl.
You're listening to WLAK 1260 AM Amory and WBZH 910 AM W245 CT Hayward. Always streaming on the Civic Media
ABC
app.
News, I'm Dave Packer.